Hello, friends. This is the Book Spider Podcast. Hosts Chris Malmberg, Hans Berger, and Patrick Barney, myself, meet on a bi-monthly basis to discuss books, like novels, nonfiction, usually novels, but books of all kinds. Today, we're talking about Earthlings by Sayaka Murata. Earthlings is a very strange novel about 11-year-old girl Natsuki, who has a toy hedgehog named Piyut, whom she believes is from another planet called Poppin' Popopia. Natsuki also believes Piyut has given her magical powers, such as the ability to become invisible and the ability to leave her body at will. Her cousin Yu, who is also her boyfriend, believes he is an alien who has lost his spaceship and can't go home. They form a childhood bond in the face of abusive and neglectful parents and teachers. After Natsuki's teacher, Mr. Igasaki, sexually assaults her, Natsuki begs Yu to have sex with her. Yu agrees, and Natsuki feels that the contamination of Mr. Igasaki has been washed away by Yu's purity. However, Natsuki and Yu are found naked together by their parents, leading to a long, long separation. 20 years later, Natsuki is an adult, still dealing with the trauma of being raped as a child. She has married Tomoya, a man who has experienced childhood abuse also, but only because they both want their relatives to quit asking them to pair up and mate for the baby-making factory, which is how they think of modern society. Their relationship is friendly, but platonic. At one point, Natsuki hears that Yu is staying at a family cottage in the mountains, where the incident between them occurred. Having not seen him in 2 decades, Natsuki goes to visit, with Tomoya tagging along. When she sees Yu again, she realizes that he has given up his childish belief that he is an alien without a spaceship, though it's not exactly clear how much Natsuki believes in all of her, like, magical powers and whatnot, but it still seems like she clings to her belief that Piyut was from Poppin' Popopia and that she had magical powers in some way, maybe just as, like, emotional support or something like that. I'm not quite sure. However, through interaction and discussion, Natsuki and Tomoya begin to convince Yu that their society exists solely to perpetuate itself through baby-making. Meanwhile, Natsuki, who is narrating the novel, reveals that shortly after Mr. Igasaki assaulted her, he ended up murdered. She understands, in fact, that she was the one who killed him. Mr. Igasaki had told her to come to his house for another special tutoring session, but Piyut had told her that Mr. Igasaki's house contained a wicked witch who wanted to kill her. In order to save herself and the world, Natsuki had to kill the witch. In Mr. Igasaki's house, everything is strangely pink, except for a glowing blue pupa that Natsuki believes is the witch. She stabs it over and over with a garden scythe, and it spurts golden liquid everywhere. She escapes the house, and Piyut thanks her profusely for saving the world. Later, Natsuki learns that she did not kill a wicked witch, but rather Mr. Igasaki. Back in present day, Yu gradually comes over to Natsuki and Tomoya's side. After Tomoya's father arrives at the cottage, confronts him about his non-marriage to Natsuki, and beats him, the three decide that they will no longer participate in society. The mountain town where the cottage is situated is deserted by its residents for winter, but Natsuki, Tomoya, and Yu decide to stay on, hiding in their cottage and stealing food from empty neighboring homes. They begin to think of themselves as Poppin' Popopians who only act naturally. They live in a shared nest like rats and wonder how best to handle urges like sexual desire and hunger. One fateful night, they are attacked by Mr. Igasaki's parents. Natsuki kills them, and she realizes that they have figured out that she killed their son 20 years ago. Natsuki's sister told them that Natsuki was his killer, which she had known about since then, but kept secret to protect her own interests. Because they are running out of food and are trapped in the mountain town for the winter, they decide the best thing to do is eat Mr. Igasaki's parents' bodies. They do so, and each of them feels a deep hunger for meat erupt in their bodies. Tomiyu suggests that if they run out of food before winter ends, they should eat each other, and this leads them to taking bites out of one another's bodies to see which tastes the best. The novel ends when they are discovered, mangled and bleeding, presumably, by Natsuki's sister and a rescue squad. So originally I had asked a few questions, but something that Hans just revealed before the podcast started makes me want to start with this question. So, you know, Hans, you said you thought this novel sucked, which, you know, I liked it. I thought it was disturbing and hilarious at some points, but, you know, it's not so high in my estimation that you saying it sucks offends me or anything like that. So I'd like to know why you thought it sucked, Hans, and Chris, whether you agree with Hans or if you have a different opinion. So yeah, let's start with that.
If I could frame it actually maybe in a more positive way, at least a way that's more positive toward you. If I remember right, Patrick, the reason that we read this book was because somebody had told you that they read Gusano, your recent novel, and Gusano reminded them of Earthlings.
Yeah, like my friend Heather. Yeah.
And I had the striking experience of reading this in that light and thinking, actually, Gusano is actually way better.
Well, that's good.
And I think, like, when you, I don't know, like maybe you guys don't get this feeling, but like when I feel like something is overrated, I tend to become very hostile to it in a way that I would not be if I were approaching it in a vacuum. And I think the fact that like this book is doing something supposedly, and I may be in some ways truly similar to your book, but it's not as good as your book. But it seems to have a much larger audience and a certain amount of regard, and from what I could tell, right, like some buzz online, you know, like it got buzz on TikTok. Yeah. I became very resentful to it, I think, for that reason. It wasn't so much that it was, I mean, it's a book, right? Like it's got a, you know, it's got a story with an arc, and it's got, you know, like a, it's, it doesn't waste time, I guess. Like it's not incompetent, but it just didn't really seem to me to be doing anything that great, really.
Right.
It didn't seem to be doing anything that impressive. And it didn't really seem to be saying much of anything that clever. And it just doesn't have much. I don't know. Like, it didn't, maybe you might have found it funnier than I did. And if you did, that might go a long ways toward being fond of it. But I don't know. Like, the prose is incredibly basic and uninteresting. I don't think that there's any in any way insightful or clever social commentary here, right? I mean, there's like kind of a gesture towards some ideas, but as an actual critique of society, it's really, I think, quite one-dimensional and vapid.
Yeah.
I didn't really find any of the humor that humorous. The characters are all very kind of like, none of the characters have any depth or nuance. There's just nothing particularly, once you get over the shockingness of it, which, I mean, maybe other people would find the shock more appealing or find the shock more interesting, but once you get over the shockingness of it, which I don't think was really like in 2024, like the things that it's trying to shock us with, I don't think really register anymore. Like there's just not much here. I don't know. It's like, I kept thinking, like, it's like Story of the Eye for asexual zoomers, you know, like it's, but Story of the Eye was done 100 years ago, right? It just doesn't
I've
have
heard
much.
Of and it, Story of the Eye.
Oh, Story of the Eye. It's a French novel from the, I don't remember exactly when, early 20th century about these two, It's, I mean, it's not like a literal one for one, but it's a story about two teenage lovers who, it's been a while since I read it, but basically they rebel against the hypocrisies of bourgeois morality by having a bunch of gross sex and mutilating a priest.
Oh, all right, all right.
It's pretty much like, I mean, if you think about like, okay, well, you start with the idea that middle class society is empty and hollow and pointless and hypocritical, and then you act out against that by kind of doing one-dimensionally gross things. Like, that's where I see the overlap between these works.
Right. Sure.
Yeah, so I don't know, like, if we were still doing the small press that we used to do, and we got this mm-hmm. as a submission from some unpublished author with no audience, I would think, oh, they've got kind of a spark here. But for the level of attention it seems to be getting, it just seemed to me very undeserving, and I kind of was rooting against it for that reason, and it never overcame the way that I was rooting against it for being undeserving.
How do you feel, Chris?
I'd like to tease its return to that, Hans. It's an interesting thing you said about, you know, books that have a really, like, a lot of hype around them, and then you read them and then you kind of turn against them. I think that I'd like to return to that at some point. Because I had a similar experience with this. I think it's partially because parts of it are so unpleasant to read, even if they're even if I did find one part really funny, like one moment really, really funny. And that is Natsuki and Tomoya. Living together, traveling to the kind of like summer getaway space where Yu is staying, and they meet up, and then they're up to that point after the jump in time. It's not really made clear that Tomoya and Natsuki are living in a continuous state of believing that they're aliens. They're just sort of shown to be living in an asexual marriage, kind of a partnership marriage that is, you know, a little bit different, but not all that odd. And then they find you, or they are with you, and then Tomoya just starts going off and off on being, you know, basically, like, it's revealed that Natsuki and Tomoya still believe that they're aliens. And that was like a part that I found kind of funny. But yeah, the sexual assault is really deeply unpleasant. The people around them are extremely unpleasant. Natsuki's mom, Yu's mother, this community around them is so toxic that their disassociation from humanity is not all that interesting. It just kind of seems really it makes sense, and then it, you know, the reasons behind that disassociation are so gross and unpleasant. I don't know. I too kind of turned against this book. I thought the end felt like it was really interesting. Like, I thought that the very, very, very end was interesting enough to have me, you know, think about it and sort of wonder what is being said there. I feel also that I'm maybe being unnecessarily critical of this book, or overly critical of this book, in part because of that success that that Hans is talking about, and the sort of idea that this is, you know, maybe even like saying something significant. But the combination of that, you know, reputation that I feel I question whether it's earned, and the fact that I really found parts of this book super unpleasant made me kind of turn against it.
So that's interesting. That's a question that I had. Like, so we both mentioned, or you both mentioned, like, Chris, you said there are lots of things that are unpleasant in this novel. Hans, you said like there's definitely this shock factor to the novel. And, you know, so, you know, we've got the really quite horrifying scene of Natsuki being raped by Mr. Igasaki, and we don't really have, and the final scene with the cannibalism is also disturbing, not in the same way, but we also have descriptions of other like forms of child abuse, you know, Natsuki being beaten by her mother, Tomoyo's mother forcing him to bathe with her into his teens. Like, these are all very disturbing, unpleasant things. And, you know, are these okay? Or, like, does the novel use them in a way that is profitable? Or is this, like, one of the novel's failures that you guys really dislike?
I don't have a problem with these very difficult scenes, these very unpleasant topics being and storylines being explored. I think one of the others is, and I believe I understood this correctly, Tomoya is going to commit elder rape at some point.
He wants to, as an act of rebellion against society, he wants to break taboos. So he says insect is a kind of huge taboo. Or did I say insect? I meant incest is a huge taboo.
The other insect. Yeah.
Yeah. Incest is a huge taboo. So he's like, I'm gonna go have sex with my grandpa or uncle, who is in a vegetative state in a home or a medical facility. So yeah, like he wants to commit elder incest rape, and then when Natsuki and Yu say he shouldn't do that, he decides to go ask his uncle or his brother to have sex.
Yeah,
with
him. Yeah. I think I think there was actually one other. Like, I won't get into it. That was dry enough to be somewhat funny, despite how gross it was. But
yeah, that was a little funny.
Yeah, yeah, that was,
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the motivations and the characters are not complex enough to make those things larger than what they are, which is just gross. Like, the sister, Natsuki's sister, is a super unpleasant narcissistic bully. Her mom is a super unpleasant narcissistic bully. Igasaki is a sexual predator, you know, who is you know, celebrated for being, you know, good looking, and everyone seems to like him, but, you know, that's not really a complication of his character. The central three, Tomoya and Natsuki and Yu, are really, you know, they're interesting, but you know,
not that interesting.
They're not that interesting. But like,
I agree. They definitely could be deeper, more multifaceted characters.
But Tomoya's you know, planned like sort of anti-human act is handled so cerebrally that it's funny, but it's not very meaningful. And I feel like the book is either gross but not very meaningful or funny but not very meaningful. Sorry, Hans.
Maybe this is missing the point also to some extent, but it's strange to me that these people get into their 30s and just seem to be completely unaware that there's any cultural history for the idea of acting out against society. It's like you know, and it's one thing to be a fifth grader or, you know, a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, however old they're supposed to be at the beginning. But to get into your 30s and have no cultural model for pushing back against bourgeois normalcy other than to say that you're from the planet Poppin' Papa Pia and go rape your uncle, it's just very strange to me, right? Like, it makes it feel unrealistic, right? It makes it feel like the whole thing is sort of just like a... Well, I don't know what it makes it feel like exactly, but it just makes everybody seem ungrounded and inhuman and less full. And it makes the book feel much less authentic to actual humanity, which then makes it more difficult to take it as a social critique, and I think makes it more difficult to argue that the unpleasantness is serving any kind of effect beyond... I don't even know what effect it serves, and not much of one, really. I mentioned this to you guys in chat, but I happened to, based on my experience with this book, I had enough time before the podcast to reread Heaven by Mieko Kawakami.
Mm.
And
good book.
A really good book. And I wasn't sure if I would like it on a reread, and I really, really enjoyed it on a reread. Mm-hmm. And obviously there are some big differences between Earthlings and Heaven, but... there are certain ways that the setup is similar, right? They're both novels about children within probably a couple years of each other, age-wise, in Japan, who are relentlessly, ceaselessly bullied and abused in really shocking ways, either by their peers or by their family, and who try to find some way of acting out against that in an atypical fashion, right? Who try to find some way of removing themselves from that world and being beyond it and above it. And in Heaven, it's by a kind of, you know, Nietzschean embrace of kind of suffering as a way of making meaning. In Earthlings, it's the whole thing about, you know, the delusions of Pop and Papa Pia. But like in, you know, Earthlings, like there are, sorry, in Heaven rather, there are some pretty shocking descriptions of violence and sexual assault that to me were much more uncomfortable to read and much more emotionally moving because they were happening to people who felt like more full, rounded, meaningful, alive people, right? It's like a horror movie, right? Like, you know, what makes you care about whether or not somebody gets slashed up by the slasher in a slasher film? Well, you have to take a little bit of time at the beginning to make them seem a little more rounded and compelling, or they're just meat, you know? And yeah, like the thinness of the characterization here and the way that it exists kind of out of any meaningful social context, made the shock less shocking and just generally kind of made the story less appealing.
Yeah, I had to skip through some parts of this book. Because it was a combination of like, this is making me uncomfortable. And I know that like, I don't think that I'm missing anything but the discomfort that I meant to feel by skipping, you know, a few paragraphs here, you know? So.
I think that's interesting, Hans, that the way I worded the question, I said, you know, is the novel's use of these very disturbing things acceptable? And you kind of flipped it to say, well, because the novel's characters are thin, these scenes aren't as disturbing or effective as they should be, which I definitely think is an interesting kind of interesting way to think about it.
I mean, I will say that, like, I don't think that the use of disturbing material is achieving any kind of thematic or aesthetic function, right? Like, if the question is, is the unpleasantness of it balanced by the achievement of something significant? No. I don't know. I mean, I don't like the word unacceptable, right? I don't want to, like, go into the Amazon servers and, like, delete this off Kindle, you know, but recall right, every right, copy right. and pulpit, you know, but I don't think that if I were, like, I wasn't really bothered by any of that stuff, honestly. Like, I have a pretty thick skin for it in a fictional context. I didn't feel, like, attacked by it. But I do think that if I were someone who found it more unpleasant, more triggering, I would feel as though I had been manipulated toward no meaningful end.
And that's definitely something that I think I agree with about this novel. Like, I definitely feel like, so it's like, you know, Natsuki and Tomoya and you all point out something that is at least there's something interesting in saying, like, the cyclical nature of society is such that we feel a lot of the time like machines, in that we reproduce, society keeps going, and they our offspring reproduce, and so on and so on, and it all feels meaningless. So I think that that's a reasonable thematic place to start, but I also agree that it doesn't seem to really dig deeper or do anything more with that idea. And, like, we could have more, like, we could go deeper. So I agree that go on, Chris.
I was gonna say, well, one particular, like, delta that I think felt pretty ripe for, you know, further exploration was Natsuki as an adult believing that she is an alien but wanting to be brainwashed into being an Earthling. Like, that's very interesting. Like, that's a I thought, actually, at the time, like when I was reading it, like, this is great. Like, this, we've gotten here, and, like, all of the work that we've done to get here, this is I'm happy that we found this trailhead, you know, because, like, that to me is really fascinating. I don't know how, like, else you kind of, like, get to that point, other than, you know, I think that it, should that have been, you know, used more, I think that, like, you earn the right to kind of, like, do a lot of, you know, shocking stuff, and but it wasn't, to me, like, that was so underexplored, and I was less interested in the kind of, I don't know, echo chamber that the three of them set up and talking about, like, the factory, and more like, what is it like when Natsuki is presented with opportunities to be sort of assimilated into society, and what actually sort of fights against that, and what pushes her one way or the other. Like, that would have been, that was something that I really looked for and felt disappointed in not finding.
Right. Especially when I like that point, Chris, like, when they do get into their own echo chamber, like, nothing that they say seems like it could ever be a serious, you know, you know, they're like, what do we do with sexual desire, right? Like, well, and Tomi is like, well, we deal with it on our own, right? You know, we deal with it by ourselves. And that, I mean, that's fine, but it's not like super deep or super interesting. Whereas if we get like something like Natsuki, like being forced to choose between going down some kind of brainwash path or a non-brainwash path, that could be more interesting.
In a way, Tomoya and you rest the they kind of insulate Natsuki from, I think, more interesting stuff, because like basically like they all just sort of like reinforce each other's beliefs, and then they, you know, get to the end, which I still think the end is interesting, but I don't know exactly like if it's interesting because it does something or if I don't understand what it's doing, but right. I just wanted more. You said it already, but I wanted more.
Right. Makes sense. I think that makes a lot of sense. What was I going to say? There was something else that I wanted to point out about the end. Let's assume that for the most part, now I'm not saying this is correct, but let's assume for the most part that we're kind of supposed to agree that society is a baby-making factory, right? Like, do you think that we're supposed to kind of agree with that?
That's something that I wondered a few times as I was reading this. Like, is the attempt at social critique here, is that meant to be taken on its own terms as actually like a thoughtful critique of society? Or is it,
right,
is there some extra layer of irony we're supposed to understand that like these people are so traumatized that they can't even formulate an actual social critique, right? Is there...
Right.
Are we meant to see their perspective as being kind of stunted and vapid, or are we meant to see it as subversive genius? And I don't really find... I can't find any evidence that we're supposed to see through it, right? I can't find any textual evidence that we're supposed to see it as anything other than like a legit and meaningful criticism of the I keep using the word society, right? But it's the best I can come up with. Like,
right.
I can't find any textual evidence that we're supposed to see it as anything other than a legit criticism of the baby factory.
So
maybe I'm missing something if you want to articulate a counter thought there.
Well, so if there is something where we're supposed to, like, you know, maybe not totally reject the idea of society as a baby-making factory, but maybe think about it in a more complex way, it seems like the ending would be the candidate to be that critique. I know I'm not saying exactly what I'm trying to say, but give me a second. So let's assume that the novel says it wants us to agree that society, the aspects of society that are like a baby-making factory are deeply problematic. Let's say that the novel wants us to believe that. But then we get to the end where we see these characters going down an extreme path where they say, yes, society is a baby-making factory, so let's only act rationally, and that causes them to do a bunch of messed up things, like eat the dead bodies of... I mean, there's an argument that cannibalism in survival scenarios is probably morally acceptable, but, you know, like, they decide to draw out of society, they live like rats in a nest, they eat the bodies of these people who attack them, then they decide to eat each other, and they go, and then when they're found, they're, you know, really messed up and bloody and gross, right? So would that ending, like, kind of undo the theme that we're supposed to see society as problematic for being a baby-making machine?
I think it's hard because, so, Natsuki is very lucid about her disassociation. She actually, like, right. considers it to be a superpower,
magical.
Granted.
Yeah, a magical power.
Yeah, yeah, granted by, what's the, Piute?
Piute, the toy hedgehog.
Great, cute, very cute name, by the way. I do like
Yeah, it is a fun name.
So, she actually has the power she discovers because she's forced to perform oral sex on her teacher, and it kills her mouth, and she no longer like right. tastes anything, which I think is interesting because like the taste actually comes back in the end when they're eating, you know, those
humans
eating his parents.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
And so it's weird because like if you're looking at this novel, like, and I don't study how, you know, the human brain works or how we, you know, respond to trauma, but I think it's a pretty, like, it's a trope, at least in fiction, that, like, you know, someone who has suffered trauma shuts down. And I think that that's reflected in, you know, at least some sort of like human behavioral science. But like,
yeah, so there are real stories of people experiencing sexual abuse who disassociate. You
know, yeah,
that's factual.
That's factual. So like, so her lucid sort of grasp of disassociation and even desire for it is really weird when it feels like. Society, like, so if she were to embrace society, would the feelings come back, or would she give over herself over to numbness? Like, there's this relationship between her choice and her sort of understanding of where she is, which is outside, and the sort of attendant numbness, and whether like committing herself into society would relieve that, or whether she would, you know, she's actually like seeking relief from the pain caused by her trauma by like staying where she's at, which is outside with the Poppin' Boppians. And so I don't know if I totally understand it as a critique. I don't know how sort of all of those add up into like a sort of cohesive picture of like of society. But I feel like there is something there in a, you know, and a desire to sort of represent authentically how people retreat from society when they have suffered that kind of trauma and the kind of, you know, experience of disassociation that comes with it. And maybe the, you know, the journey back out of it when you get some kind of justice, in this case, eating her rapist's parents.
No, that's interesting. So, like, we could read the extremes of their behavior at the end as, like, something like a statement like, yes, maybe the society is a baby-making factory, but we probably shouldn't go too crazy. But you're saying that the ending has, there's some catharsis in it for Natsuki that maybe even complicates that reversal.
I don't see there's a lot of teeth in the society as a baby making factory. I see much more in this is how the indifference of a system is framed by someone who has suffered it suffered in that system in a way that allows them to put distance between themselves and that system. And they, you know, they like Natsuki is not. I don't trust Natsuki to like diagnose, you know, the factory to say like exactly what, you know, is wrong with the factory. But I don't know. I see it as more representative of trauma than representative than as a you know, anything like a critique of society.
Okay. So it's more like this is more about trauma than saying this is more about describing trauma than necessarily critiquing, you know, the problematic aspects of baby making.
Sorry, it took me so long to get there.
No, but that makes sense. Does that ring true for you, Hans, or?
I mean, I guess I can see somebody offering that as an excuse for it, right? Like, and it gets into kind of complicated territory where if we had somebody here who was a fan of the book, right? And their argument was, well, this is a subjective representation of the disassociation of trauma. And presumably, you know, there's things in the author's bio that we can read as her experiencing equivalent trauma.
Right.
It puts it in a position where it becomes like ethically problematic, or where somebody could advance it as ethically problematic to think it's a bad book, right? Because like, oh, well, are you questioning the authentic emotional experience of the victims of trauma? That's very patriarchal and whatever of you, right?
Like misogynist or
misogynist, yeah. Ableist, there you go.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to construct an ethical system where my aesthetic experience of reading the thing is irrelevant next to the kind of emotional context of it being a document of trauma, then I guess so, right? But then the podcast becomes kind of irrelevant anyway, you know? Like, I see Chris's point in terms of one way to read and think about the book. And I guess you could frame it even as, I mean, if the baby factory model is actually a pretty inadequate form of social critique, you could say, oh, well, that's not meant to be a social critique. That's how trauma makes you think, right? But like, I don't know. And maybe I'm kind of strawmanning here, right? Like I'm making up somebody else's defense of the book, and maybe that's unfair in a different way. But yeah, I don't know. Like I can see Chris's point as a model for understanding some of the choices and what's happening here, but I don't think that makes it ultimately more successful as an artistic work.
It wouldn't make, for example, thin characters, like flat characters, better. Like you, even if you're representing trauma, you need strong characters. Go ahead, Chris.
No, that's what I was going to say. I think especially if this isn't about, you know, societal systems and societal norms and trying to critique sort of cultural infrastructure that allows things to perpetuate, then it needs to really be about the characters, and the characters are not that interesting. Like if this was tracing trauma, If it's tracing trauma, then it needs to be about, you know, it needs to be about Natsuki and to make whatever makes sense of whatever sort of like arc and then final escape velocity like she's achieved. And I don't really feel that.
It mostly feels like almost like the plot is incidental, like it's some there are some, like, there are a few key set piece scenes that the author wants to show us, and then everything in between, which is where, like, the bulk of the character work should be done, is missing or very reedy, so to say. Okay, so I'm going to combine the first question on my list with the last question on my list, because ultimately I think they are the same thing. So one thing that we haven't talked about in this novel is level of realism. You know, I mean, realism has come up in certain comments. People are like, you know, Hans or Chris, one of you's said, you know, it's not realistic or something like that. But to get at, like, where the realism stands, let me ask this. If the novel has one more chapter, what do you think happens in that chapter?
It's a good question.
I think probably they all go to jail. And in jail, their swollen bellies full of the teacher's parents diminish as they digest the massive amount of human flesh they've gorged. And they all spend the rest of their lives in a psych ward.
All right. So that seems to me like that's a classic realist take. But I genuinely wondered if the next chapter isn't, like, I genuinely wondered this. Could it be that in the next chapter they use their magical powers from Pop and Pop Popia to convert all of the human race into Pop and Pop Popians? Is that a possibility?
Well, I think that depends to some extent on whether or not we're meant to understand the social critique is valid, right? Because what's kind of happening is that, you know, the protagonist has come up with this idea of society's a baby-making factory and everything human is inherently wrong. And that's compelling enough that, you know, her husband and her cousin have both kind of gone, yeah, all right.
Just the way you said that cracked me up.
I mean, I'm a little bit simplifying the sequence there, but I mean, that's essentially what happens,
exactly.
Right? Is that this way of thinking becomes a kind of a mind virus, right? And it's a little bit like, you know, like, I've been listening to a podcast on mass psychogenic illness, right? Like, the way that things like Havana syndrome spread when you have, like, Havana syndrome, or the idea that you can have, like, a fatal overdose by touching a bag that used to contain fentanyl, things that have no basis in fact, but people kind of see it and act it out in a way that becomes physiologically true because it's psychologically compelling, right? And the idea of becoming a Pop and Popopean, if you believe that the view that is being put forward here of society is a compelling one, then yeah, sure, like, as more people are, you know, as the news stories come out, as the other witnesses talk about what happened, as they're interviewed for the paper, like, their way of thinking will spread because it is so seductive and true. If you, alternately, I think if you read that as being vapid, then it won't, right? They'll spend the rest of their lives in the psych ward and...
But in either case, you're saying they don't actually have magical powers, and Piute is not actually from Pop and Pop Popia.
I never read the novel in that way, no. I mean, I think, like, if they're... but, I mean, I do think that, like, if their viewpoint is taken as a serious critique, then that... maybe that opens the possibility that they are from another planet, or that they would be able to spread their ideas and their way of life so effectively that they might as well be magic creatures from another planet, right? as opposed to Dead End Misfits.
Did you have anything you wanted to add on that, Chris?
Not really. I think that I don't know exactly how to unpack the ending beyond enjoying how strange and like unclear it was. Like I like that. I like when something has energy, but it's not really like easy to abstract down to, you know, like this is what this means. So it had that energy and that ambiguity that I tend to like. But I don't know what a next chapter would be. I like the question more than I have an answer.
Fair enough. Oh, one final thing. Chris, you've already kind of answered this, and I wanted to hear what you had to say, Hans. What would have made the thematic issues more satisfying or better for you, Hans? Like, Chris, you said, you know, like, what if we get more of this, like, you know, Natsuki choosing to be brainwashed? So how about you, Hans?
Maybe more nuance in the world around the characters, right? Everything is so one-dimensionally evil. Every adult is so completely villainous. The closest thing that you come to kind of a balanced critique is the narrator's mother being yelled at by her boss in a similar way to how the mother yells at the narrator. But that's just like the very beginning, you know? And I think everything is so one-dimensional here that there's just no relationship to the world. But by the same token, I think like the whole edifice of the thing kind of rests upon a one-dimensional social critique, right? It rests upon a lack of nuance in how the world is understood by the characters and, as far as I can tell, by the viewpoint of the novel itself. So, I don't know, like there's kind of the architecture of it, to at least to my, I don't know if you can fix it. I don't know if you can fix it without changing the nature of the thing so deeply that it becomes just a different book, such as Heaven by Mieko Kaku.
Or Gusano by Patrick Barney.
Or Gusano by Patrick Barney, yes.
Okay, cool. Thank you, guys. You know, like, As I said, I found this novel interesting and somewhat enjoyable, but, like, nothing about it made me think that we shouldn't critique it. I agree with you, it definitely has shortcomings, and you know, hopefully we've exposed some of them. Hey friends, this is Future Patrick coming at you to let you know that Chris Malmberg, whose turn it was to pick a book, forgot to do so during the initial recording of the podcast. He got back to us later and decided on The Master and Margarita by Mikhail Bulgakov. I think that's how you pronounce his name. If it's not, I apologize to Russian listeners who know how to pronounce the name that I do not know how to pronounce. So thank you for tuning in to our discussion of Earthlings by Sayaka Murata. It was an interesting, if flawed, book. And you know, next time we'll discuss The Master and Margarita, which is a classic. So peace out until next time.